Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
All right, welcome back to Saved by the Bellini, the podcast. I am John DeBerry, and this is the podcast where we take a little behind-the-scenes peek into the making of my cocktail book, Saved by the Bellini, which is a love letter to the 90s as told through cocktails. And throughout this series, we're kind of talking to people who had influence on the book, whether it's directly or indirectly, and the person who probably had the most direct impact on this book was my editor. Her name is Amanda Englander, and she actually is the editor of both my this book, Saved by the Bellini, but also my first cocktail book, which is called Drink What You Want. And so we've been colleagues, friends since, you know, I think the day we met, basically. We have great chemistry. We're really fond of each other, and we are just great partners together in writing. And so I wanted to bring her on just to talk about her work as an editor and kind of what that looks like. And also, I think we just end up kind of gabbing and being friends for like half of this conversation. So, so I think it's really fascinating to hear how an editor works and how she kind of got her start. And also just like the kind of chemistry that she and I have. And you can definitely see the kind of like affection that we have for each other and how it kind of manifests in the book, which you should definitely read, by the way. So enjoy. Cheers.
Okay, Amanda, thanks so much for joining me on this.
It is my pleasure to be here.
I'm also honored that it is your very first podcast recording ever.
Yes, baby's first podcast.
I find that hard to believe, considering
how
much media you're involved in.
No, I like to be behind the scenes.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Fair enough. So this is a little bit of a front.
I'm very nervous.
This is a behind the scenes podcast, so I feel like you're still technically okay, behind the scenes. Because it's all sort of a look behind the book and how it got made. And how it gets made is largely in part thanks to the editor of the book, which you are.
You helped.
I helped.
Yeah.
I know.
But I couldn't have had that much alcohol in my possession at one time. Do you remember that shopping cart picture?
What shopping?
You sent me after
when I went shopping for all the alcohol? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
It's alarming.
Yeah, you know, it's really crazy how easy it is just to go and buy enough alcohol to kill yourself and no one says anything.
Anything?
Yeah.
They don't, like, did you get carded on that trip?
No, they know me at Astor at this point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a little disappointing.
I've been carded, but not for that.
Okay. Fair enough. The bar across the street from my office cards everyone.
I mean, you can definitely get carded.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. You will definitely. You're cardable.
I appreciate that. You've endeared yourself to me. Thanks.
All right, so now that I've warmed you up, I wanted to talk to you about the process of writing this book, and I don't know who's going to listen to this podcast to be very honest, but I feel like the kind of process of what it actually takes to write basically a cookbook essentially is or even just any book of it is not necessarily like common knowledge for a lot of people.
No, I would say it's
unless
not.
You've written a book.
I haven't, but I know how. but no, I do think it's this very sort of mysterious. Publishing itself is a mysterious industry, I feel like, and especially the writing of a cookbook. A lot of people think it's a great idea or would be super fun, and don't necessarily realize how much work goes into it.
Yeah.
So and how long it takes.
Yeah.
So it's a while.
It is a while.
How long did it take you to write the book?
That's a good question because I think I split it up. we worked on both of my books together, which is very
nice.
Sure
did.
And the first book was very definitive. You know, it was very much like, oh, here's my, this is the daiquiri recipe that I think you should use. And this is like the standard for this. So there wasn't a lot of like really intense like R&D and recipe testing in the way it was for the Saved by the Bellini. Whereas Saved by the Bellini, it's like pretty much every single recipe except for like one or two were like whole cloth fabrications because I had to create drinks that were like geared towards literally like a punchline.
Yeah.
And it's hard to find a recipe off the shelf, you know, that fits like a Spice Girls punchline. So
you killed it. You did it.
So I did a lot of R&D. I went shopping, as you saw. And I basically built myself like a back bar. And then I sort of limited myself to those things rather than just like theoretically writing all these recipes and then finding out that I needed to buy 70 million different bottles. Because I think it's one of the most common critiques I hear of cocktail books is that they're like, oh, this book looks great and it's really fun and I opened up the recipe and I realized I needed to buy 8 bottles and then never use those bottles again. So I really wanted it to be like tight and like user friendly. Like, so if you have a limited back bar, you don't have to like go crazy and buy a ton of shit. So that process took like maybe 3 months, I'd say. Not like constant, but like, you know, beginning to end. And then the writing part of it was actually pretty quick because it was like, I mean, the title, the book writes itself. And then once you have the concepts, once you have like, okay, I want to make a Spice Girls drink, I want to make a Jurassic Park drink. And then once you have the recipe and the concept, it's just the head note is just a breeze. And even though I wrote like 900 word head notes that you then had to make into like 300 word head notes.
Yeah, maybe like 175 even. Yes.
Yeah.
There was some shortening.
Yeah, there was some shortening.
Should we talk about the shortening of your first book, or are we not?
I would love to talk about that because I think it's amazing.
It is. Yes, John. How many words was the first draft of that book?
Well, according to my contract, I had to provide a 56,000 word manuscript.
Okay.
And that's what I did.
Oh.
And then we cut it down.
Whose idea was that?
And I don't know. Maybe it was mine.
I do not recall. But yes, I believe we cut about a third of it.
Yeah, all down to 38. Right?
Yeah, that's better for a cocktail book, I feel like.
Yeah, I think so.
It felt like the right size.
No, it was perfect. Yeah.
It's a good size. I've actually used that size for other books. It's good.
But you know, for me, I think that the writing process is like, something I learned, especially through writing Drink What You Want and having to cut so much of it out, was that it's almost like when you're writing, this is going to sound really pretentious, but like if when you're writing, it's like the first draft is like your like block of marble.
Okay.
And there's somewhere in there is like your sculpture.
Yes.
But you're not going to get the sculpture until you have the block of marble. So you just need to go,
yes,
just get it all out.
Totally.
And then just not be too attached to anything.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. yes, you're, I think, now familiar with the phrase, kill your darlings.
Kill your darlings. I love killing my darlings.
I love killing your darlings too. Aww. We have so much in common. But yes, it is. It's definitely a lot of people do write that way. They just sort of spill their guts. Because you don't know what the good thing is going to be or what the relevant thing is going to be. And, you know, there's some self-editing, of course. But then I really view it as my job to go in and smooth the edges, shape, maybe fill in, maybe chip away a little more, and so on and so forth. So,
yeah. Maybe let's back up with some biographical information about you.
Oh, about me?
I mean, I will intro you and tell you, say where you work, but how many, you know, cookbooks, and I include cocktail books as a cookbook. How many books do you think you've edited in your career?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
A lot. You told me I didn't need to prepare for this, so I didn't. You said I was prepared. I can see why you think I would know that number, but I simply don't. But a lot. I don't know. I'm also very bad at quick math. So,
okay.
or slow math.
So,
math
so isn't my,
I do words. I do words.
True.
Yes, definitely a lot. And you know, there was a time when I was doing, I don't know, like upwards of 20 a year even.
Yikes.
So, you know, a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what's the appeal of cookbooks for you?
I love eating.
Okay.
I love food. When I was in college, this is like a pretty distinct memory for me, my college roommate, who I'm still very good friends with, she would always, you know, we would like come to the city and, you know, in our sort of like freshman year of life when we first lived in the city after graduation, she wanted to sort of save her money to spend on clothes and shoes and bags. Mm-hmm. And I was always willing to spend that money on a great meal.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of hard to get her to come with me and blah, blah, blah. But, it just always was about the great meal for me. So, I don't know. I feel very lucky to have found this sort of niche of the universe that is a perfect marriage of my love for food and my uncanny ability to place commas correctly. I know.
You taught me a lot about commas.
Oh my God. Did I?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I take so many of my commas out now because of you. They're way overused.
You're right. You're reminding me now that you're a little comma happy. Yeah. But yeah, so it's a thing. So yeah, that's sort of it. And when I first got into publishing, I, like many, thought I wanted to find the next great American novel.
Uh-huh.
And actually my first job, I don't know if anyone cares about this, but
I care.
You care?
Yeah,
oh,
I do.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So my very first job, I was an assistant to two different people, and one of them was the women's fiction editor. And at the time, chick lit was mm-hmm. a very hot category, and I was super excited about working on those kinds of books.
Like Candace Bushnell kind of stuff?
Precisely.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Nanny Diaries, that sort of
yes.
thing. And then I was working also for another editor who worked on prescriptive nonfiction. And I was like, that's fine. She seems nice. Like, I'll figure it out. And, you know, a couple months into the job, they both asked me to edit with them, edit in front of them, basically do a pass so that they could then
see how you edit.
See how I edit. Yeah, sure. It was probably a test. But also it was like, make it easier for them once they got in there. And as I was editing a novel, I was like, well, I don't know. Like, do you want this to be this way? This is a symbol. Like, I don't know. What are you trying to get at here? It was very subjective.
Yeah.
Whereas the nonfiction, it was a cleaning book. It was Mrs. Meyer's cleaning book.
Wow.
Yes.
Like the Meyers, like the soap?
Correct.
With all the letters
yes,
on it?
Yes, yes, yeah. Indeed. I just was like, well, why isn't there a chapter on the garage and organizing that? And it was just like very black and white to me.
Like an instruction manual.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yes. And just sort of a fitting together of pieces.
Yeah.
And from there I was like, okay, so I'm a nonfiction editor. Got it. And I happened to be at that company when they were launching a lifestyle imprint. So I just sort of, a little bit of publishing is right place, right time.
Yeah.
So we can maybe chalk it up to that. But I became really interested in that area, and then it became my thing.
Yeah. And when you're editing a manuscript and you get it, I actually feel like I thought about everything I knew about like kind of how the process worked was kind of like wrong before I started doing it. And like, for me, I always thought that like I would be like, you know, writing a part of it and then sending it to an editor and then getting it back and then like writing this whole book like kind of in weird patches. And then you were like, don't talk to me until you're done.
I didn't say
that. No, not
that.
Like that, but like, and I appreciated it too, because I think that sounded like an infuriating process.
Yeah.
To have to do that and not have the end of the book done before you start editing the beginning of the book, which makes absolutely no sense if you think about it. But I've heard people say, oh, I'm like, I have five chapters due tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's how this works. When you have a manuscript that gets popped in front of you and you start and you're like, okay, I'm going to edit this. Like, what is your like, what is your process? Like, what is your, like, first pass? Like, what are you, like, do you just dive into it and you just don't have any really, you're like, okay, this is my comma read?
So, no. So, okay, a few things. One is to address the sort of the piecemeal bit. Mm-hmm. Some people definitely do write that way, and some people definitely do edit that way.
Yeah.
I don't prefer it because I like to have the sort of entire overview, the 360. Mm-hmm. A lot of people write the introduction last. They, you know, you kind of see where the book takes you mm-hmm. and then go back to the beginning to say what you've accomplished. And here's what I set out to do in the beginning of the book. So I don't prefer it that way. And I don't, you know, but some people do whatever, however you get it down on paper.
Right.
But I also, I take a lot of steps with my authors sort of leading up to the sitting down in front of a blank screen typing. So, you know, I like to look at an outline together. I like to look at a recipe list together, and have a little bit of back and forth on that. And I always refer to it as a roadmap. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's a kind of a living, breathing document. Like, you're going to get in the kitchen and do something that wasn't part of the plan. And it's a great idea. And you shouldn't not do it just because it wasn't part of the plan. And something that was part of the plan is not going to pan out how you thought it would. But I like to have that so that if you do sort of get lost along the way, it's something we can refer back to, and it can kind of get us back on track or ground us, you know, in the, if the writing process kind of gets a little off the rails, which I don't know, it sometimes does, it sometimes doesn't. It's also helpful for me, to, even if it does change, to give that sort of like, okay, I mean, I've told people, I've been like, did you know you liked peanut butter that much? Like, you have it in 13 recipes. And they're like, I had no idea. And so I'm looking at it for that. And I'm also looking at it for, you have 22 recipes in this chapter and 7 recipes in this chapter. Can we kind of balance it out a little more?
Cocktails.
Yeah. Yes, precisely. Yeah. So that... doing all that kind of work up front, by the time I do get the whole big manuscript, whether it's 38,000 or 56,000 words or another number, who can say? I kind of know, I know what I have.
Yeah.
And I do, I just dive right in. Mm-hmm. Just like in.
Yeah. Cool.
So, yeah.
So I want to talk about the specific, that specific process as it relates to Saved by the Bellini, but we're going to take a really quick break. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Okay, and we're back with my editor, Amanda Englander. And yeah, so you were just, before you were explaining kind of your like general process, and then that sort of leads me to want to talk about, you know, this kind of particular process of writing Saved by the Bellini. And you were describing a process that, like, when I was writing Drink What You Want, this is before I handed it to you, I did everything backwards. Like, I wrote the introduction first. Mm-hmm. I wrote, like, all this other, like, elaborate reference material and, like, everything. And then I wrote the recipes, and I was like, wait, half the recipes have nothing to do with the thing that I wrote. So that process was definitely a lot more... logical for Saved by the Bellini.
I will say on that one, I remember that, I mean, it was a while ago at this point, but I remember that sort of, we had this unlock moment, because there was so much, and I just was like, how are we gonna get in there?
Yeah.
And I do remember that sort of, we got it, we figured it out, and having.
Well, I was about to rewrite the whole book.
Yeah. It's been terrible for everybody.
I would have made it work.
Distinctly remember like spending a summer editing it. So, yeah.
I still have the paper printouts.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know. I don't edit on paper anymore now.
Oh.
I know. I did really like it. Remember I would have the like piles on my coffee table? Yeah. It was good.
Yeah, I love it. So anyway, I think with Saved by the Bellini, I think it was, I don't know how unique this is, but like the title was really what triggered the whole book.
Yes.
And so... that was, once we had the title down, that was sort of like everything just sort of flowed very naturally. But I do remember a very fateful and very cold Kiki's lunch.
Oh my God, it was so cold.
My fingers were numb for like 2 hours afterwards.
I had to put my feet on against a heater and potentially cause a fire.
And we set up this Google Doc together of like, I don't know how many like ideas for recipes, but they weren't even like, oh, let's do a gin drink and let's do a whiskey cocktail. It was like Enya and like, how many do we need? Like, you know, you're doing that balancing exercise where you're like, okay, we have like 10 music references and we need like 15 toy references and this and this and that. And you're like, is that something that you like, oh, like, is that like, how common is that to like, to text your author at like 5:45 in the morning being like, hey, here's another idea for a drink.
I only text you at that time because I know you're also awake. Like we are the earliest of the birds.
Yeah.
By the way, the birds start chirping in the fours, but I consider the hour of four nighttime still.
Oh yeah, same.
So it's like, you know, but we are in the rise with the sun time of year.
I had to put my shades down for the first time last night because it got way too dark, way too light, way too early.
Anyway, so I would say that is not particularly common. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, sometimes title of the book does come first. Sometimes it is like, last. We need to design the cover. What is the title? And I'm like, I don't know. Just leave room for two words.
Yeah.
So that was certainly not 100% unique. Like it wasn't a once in a lifetime for me, but I have had more experiences the opposite than this. Should we talk about the origin story of the title?
Yeah.
Okay. That was not very cold. It was like lovely al fresco dining.
It was like
weather.
a balmy June.
It was balmy. Yeah.
Almost exactly.
Time is confusing to me.
2 years ago?
It had to have
Was it 21?
It had to be, but it wasn't June.
Maybe it was later. Maybe it was August.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway.
But it was lovely al fresco weather. Yeah. We were at Felice.
Yes.
Or Felice, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
I think it was French, so let's go with Felice.
I think it's Italian.
Whatever.
It's Italian.
Okay. You would know.
Yeah, because I go there.
You go there.
I know where all of them are. The wine bar. Well, it's a restaurant, too. This may not be polite, but I'm going to say it, pounding rosé.
It was rosé and ice.
It was rosé and ice.
And I think I may have put some Pellegrino in there as well.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
It's very, very refreshing.
I was drinking Lambrusco because that's my favorite thing to order there. They have a good Lambrusco by the glass. Yes. And should we like reenact it? I don't know. How should we do this?
I don't know.
But I think you said, you sort of had the idea, right, of doing 90s themed cocktails.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I feel like I had like a couple of ideas that I was sort of like,
you did.
Let's like look at maybe there's like a ingredient based kind of thing, or there's like a nostalgia, you know, there's sort of different kind of genres of book that I was sort of pitching.
Yes.
Yeah.
You did. You had a couple ideas.
Yeah.
But I feel like this was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is my memory, so yours may be different. We can compare notes after, but
believe it or not, I remember the entire,
oh wow.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
I have a really high,
a lot of
really high tolerance.
Yeah. I know. I had like,
it was like five. Okay.
I would be on the floor. but I said, yeah, that's a good idea, but it needs a really good title.
Yeah.
Like Saved by the Bellini.
Right.
And it just like fell out of my mouth and we both were like,
yeah. I think I like immediately Googled it to make sure that it wasn't already taken, and it actually wasn't, which I found to
incredible.
Be astonishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't there for this part, obviously, but we parted ways.
Yes.
We both went into the night, and you took the bus home.
I did.
And you
the
were-
M15, select bus.
Oh, it's my favorite bus.
Such a good bus.
I feel like Eastsiders now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of Manhattan, to be specific, yes. but my understanding is you texted your agent or called your agent.
Oh, I was on the phone with Nicole, like in, with like
on the bus,
like waiting for the bus.
I love that. fun story about the M15 bus. I've lived on the Upper East Side for a long time. So until we had the queue, I was like all about the M15 bus, but I used to call it the M15. Because do you remember that like bar club place called M15?
Momofuku had a holiday party there. In like 2017.
Yeah, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I just like, it was like a brain, a mind meld for me. I was like, yeah, it's the M15. And
it's the name of the club.
It just, yeah. And I was like, but wait, it's not the M79. or the M86. So I got it eventually. Yeah. But for nostalgia's sake, I like to call it the M15.
That's cute.
But yeah, anyway, so it was sort of off to the races from there.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is like just a book that we were both born to work on.
Yeah.
And the references just like started coming fast and furious.
It was, yeah, it was nuts.
Is that a 90s reference, Fast and Furious?
I think Fast and Furious is Y2K.
Oh, okay.
Aughts.
Good to know.
Aughts.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the aughts, man. We need to work on the branding.
Yeah, aughts is not.
And then what happened? Like, what then? What, the teens?
And then I think history is just over.
Yeah.
And it's it. It's not, the end of the world. Like, I think the 90s were, like, the last distinct decade that you could, like, kind of, like, have a real sense of. And then there was, like, Y2K was, like, 2000 to 2007, 2008 financial crisis. And then after that, it's just, like, it's just game over.
I mean, something that has occurred to me since we've worked on this book is that this is going to sound stupid, but I think you'll know what I mean. It's really hard to figure out, like, when 1999 ended and like 2000 began. Like, it's very mushy and a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of like the music videos that came out in 99 have a very, very legit Y2K vibe to them.
We were preparing.
And then there's some holdovers. And same thing with like 89 to 90 and all that. It's like this faint,
I guess so,
fuzzy that's thing. True. But it's, it definitely, there was like this emerging Y2K aesthetic that sort of had its like roots in like The Matrix, you know, like that kind of like 99, 98 kind of futurism of like, wow, it's going to be the millennium in 2 years. Holy shit.
I mean, it's like basically the Minority Report now. So with the eyeballs and the
That's a good movie.
Scanning. Oh, it's such a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot. I mean, we're like not all the way there, but the like retina scanning, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's true.
But yeah, I do think it is unique to this project that you started with recipe titles.
Yeah.
And just sort of had to figure it out from there. But yes, I would definitely text you at 5:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, because a lot of it was derived from the music that I heard during my Peloton rides.
Yes, that's a deep quarantine reference.
Yeah, deep quarantine reference. Though this was sort of like post deep.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, I would like, I love a 90s ride.
Yeah.
So I would just be like, oh my God, waterfall chaser. Sometimes I text you and I'm like, this is the reference. Or sometimes I text you, this is the reference and this is the drink name.
Yeah.
I was like, don't go chasing waterfalls. Drink name, waterfall chaser.
Waterfall chaser. Yes. Also, I want to talk about the, our illustrator.
Ugh.
Which, you know, she was also on this podcast, and I feel like that was like a total, like, kismet, match made in heaven. I don't
Absolutely.
Know what the term is, but like, how do you go about, like, when you have a book that needs artwork, like, what is that process like? Because it's probably very unique to every book, right?
Yeah, you sort of start with the vibe, like, what is the mood we're after? Yeah. You know, I don't even know if we talked about it, but I think we inherently knew we wanted this to be like bright, fun, vibrant, poppy. I sort of always make a point to talk to an author about those sort of buzzwords that we can use and then build on for the visual program. Sometimes they're like clean, minimal, you know, bright light, whatever. And from there, we start researching illustrators. Similar for photography also,
right.
Like if it's a photo-driven book. We always knew this was going to be illustrated.
Yeah.
Your first book was illustrated also.
Yeah. I mean, that was also kind of controversial, I feel like. It was not immediately... I mean, I'm a first-time author, and I'm like, hey, I want this book illustrated. And
everyone's and I was like,
sure, maybe.
Yeah, that might be true. I don't remember. This part I don't remember, so I trust you.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it is illustrated.
Me too.
It's really cute.
Yeah.
but yeah, you know, every publisher works a little bit differently. I have an in-house creative team, so we have a creative director. We have an art director specifically who works on, these sorts of food, drink, lifestyle titles, because it's sort of a universe unto itself.
Yeah.
I call it the Island of Beautiful Things.
Hmm.
I know, it's nice, right? And you know, I know people who've crossed my path before and I can find people on Instagram, but they have a really, really deep knowledge.
Right.
of just sort of people in different spaces and different talents and what they'll be able to make and all of that, and people they've always wanted to work with before, right. So on and so forth. And I feel like we looked at a few different people, had some conversations with other people, and then this just sort of, to use your word, it was total kismet. And I truly cannot imagine this book with anybody else's art. It's so good.
It's so perfect.
It's so, 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 so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like I gave Clara, like, the least amount of information. Like, it wasn't unhelpful, but I was just like, hey, here's a picture, a reference picture I took. And, yes. like, Blair Witch Project.
Yes. Well, she also had your head notes,
that's
too.
True. That's so, right. Yeah, she did have that by now.
And, in fact, a couple of times she did, you know, she drew something from her heart, and I was like, oh, but this doesn't align with the head note. Right. but, yeah, so she did. I mean, I'm sure she spoke about it, but she, I think, had just a great time reading your thoughts and then turning them into art.
Yeah.
But she's so talented and...
Fast.
Yes. She's super fast.
Yeah, she told me about her process when we were talking, and it was just like remarkable. She draws like the whole thing, mm-hmm. like draws and then scans it in. And
oh,
then,
wow.
Like, it's like, and
it's wild.
And even the ones where I like the ones like the Green Day one, where I'm like, oh, I'm sure you just drew individual pieces and then just like scanned them in and then shrunk them down and made it all make sense. She was like, no, I just drew the whole thing.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God.
I like could not. People have vast talents.
Yeah.
I could never do that.
Unattainable.
I don't even know. Yeah. Great.
You see my handwriting? It's a disaster.
I can't think of what it looks like now, but I believe that. Yeah.
It's really bad.
Do you remember on your first manuscript, which I edited on paper, there was a page, the header was tequila, and I like drew a heart around it.
I do remember that.
It's my liquor of choice.
That's what made me want to write the first book with you, was that on my little proposal thingy that we were shopping around, I would get a lot of, you know, talk to editors, and they'd be like, you know, you have a great background, and like you really know a lot of stuff, but like, can you just like tone down like the voice a little bit?
No.
And I was like, no. And then you're like, I think there was like literally LOL like written and circled on it, and I'm like, I don't care what it takes. Yeah. I'm doing this book with this person.
That's something I would do.
Yeah, I do. So yeah, I do.
I use LOL unironically.
Yeah, it's useful.
It really is.
Yeah. So actually it's interesting, like about the, illustrations, like, you know, I don't think a lot of like cookbooks or like sort of instructional manual type books are illustrated, because I think people want to have like a discrete, explicit picture. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's been sometimes where it's like I'll God forbid, I'll read like my Goodreads, you know, reviews or whatever. And people are like, I wish this wasn't illustrated. And it's just like kind of a funny thing to me that people need a photo. I think it makes more sense for cookbooks, where it's like you kind of have a sense of plating and you need to like see where things are. But it's like, you know, the cocktail photo, it's like basically all about the glassware.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess some people want what they're used to, which is probably photos. But I do think it's easy for photos of singular drinks to start to look redundant in an art program in a book. There are photographed cocktail books that are gorgeous, super well done, stunning. So it's certainly
possible, doable.
Yeah, attainable. But, you know, you really have to be thoughtful about how every single shot is going to be set up. And, you know, I think your voice in writing matches really well with a sort of more playful, artful illustration. I also think in certain books, I suppose I would count cocktail books among them, there's a little more longevity to the art in illustration versus a really specific style of photography.
It can look dated.
Totally.
Yeah.
Or at least dated faster.
Yeah.
So... that's, you know, something we consider also.
Right. And then if it's a book about the 90s and it's already dated.
Yeah. Oh, immediately dated.
The point of it is dated.
Dated upon arrival. It's, we're late.
Dated upon arrival. That's a good, like, date drink.
Great. Oh, anyway. I see your wheels turning.
See, this is...
Write that down.
Like, this is just what our interactions are like all the time.
I mean, honestly, I just like text you random things. No hello.
No.
This is it. Goodbye.
Nowhere. Yeah.
Thank you.
And then it's wrong with it.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Then you come back to me. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. It's a very collaborative process.
It is very collaborative. Yeah. I feel very lucky to have an editor like you in my life.
Aww. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you already had me when you told me I looked like I needed to be carted.
Oh, that was it. Up until then, it was just,
no. Yeah, we're Yeah. Yeah. The last four or five, however many years I've known you. You are a pleasure to edit.
Oh, thanks.
Yes.
Well, I think we're coming up on kind of the end of our interview, but I maybe this is putting you on the spot.
Oh my God, I
told you not
to
prepare, but like, let's say you had,
my palms are sweating.
I mean, I'm trying to provide some useful information to the listener. And like, you know, if someone's out there who's like, you know, aspiring cocktail book, aspiring cookbook author, like what's, you know, what are some like words of wisdom that you might have?
Run. No.
Don't do it.
It's hard to say because there are a lot of different ways to approach this sort of project.
Right.
But I would say, see what else is out there. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces of advice I repeat the most, both to aspiring authors and published authors alike, is to spend time in the bookstore. Mm. So go to the bookstore.
That's really good advice.
Yeah. See what else is out there. Get a sense of what books you want to be like, mm-hmm. what books you definitely don't want to be like, what books you want to differentiate yourself from or your book from. And just really understanding what else is out there, because ultimately that's what you're being measured against.
Right.
You know, not just by an editor or an agent or whomever, but ultimately by the customer as well. So you look at the shelf and you're like, well, this is what's on the shelf. How do I fit into this?
Yeah. I think that's great.
Oh my God, I did it.
You did it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The whole thing's over now?
Yeah, the whole thing's over now.
So, like, I did the whole thing. You just pop quizzed me.
I pop quizzed you, and now.
But I did, but and
now
I did the whole
and
thing.
And now the whole thing is formally over. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. This was, I don't know if I'd do it again, but I do it. Everything I do it for you.
Aww.
So. Yeah.
Is that an 80s reference?
I think so.
Yeah,
is it everything or anything?
I think it's everything.
I think so. I think I got it right the first time. Okay.
Anyway.
I think I know whose song it is, but I don't want to embarrass myself.
It's like Richard something?
No, that's
I don't
not
know.
What I was thinking, so I'm going to refrain.
Anyway, thanks again.
Bye!
Bye! Saved by the Bellini is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
You're doing great.
Am I?
Yeah, you're doing wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah. You're a natural. You have a good radio voice, too, I think.
Oh, my God, so do you.
I do the ASMR, like...
Yeah,
I kind of push my voice up a little bit.
I don't have to in my current job, but in previous jobs, I've had to record sales presentations.
That sounds like...
For, you know, the people who go out on the road and whatever. Every time I went to do it, the person told me that I had a good...
Have you ever done, like, a phone tree recording? Like, we, you know...
No.
Hey, oh, you'd be good at that. Where it's like, hey, you've reached like so and so.
Oh, I would love to do that. Do you know anyone who needs that?
I don't know.
I would do it.
I'll look around.
I would totally do it. I'll read audiobooks too.
Mm.
I would totally do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.